A t-shirt and jeans, mac and cheese. Some things in life are an obvious match, like RIAs and Schwab Advisor Services, the number one choice for independent advisors. The difference is so obvious, it's Schwabvious. Learn why at Schwabvious.com.
This podcast is supported by The RealReal.
You know what I love most about the holidays? Giving gifts. But not just any gifts. Real gifts. Thoughtful gifts. Oh my God, how did you know gifts? That's why I love gift shopping with The RealReal. The RealReal is the most trusted name in authenticated luxury resale. And it's a holiday shopping secret I'm going to let you in on. Whether it's a surprisingly affordable, pristine condition bag for your BFF, a vintage find that's cool enough for the Gen Zer in your life, or even something your impossible to shop for dad will love. Get used to saying, I found it on The RealReal. Seriously, with over 10,000 new arrivals dropping every day from brands like Gucci, Fendi, Prada, Louis Vuitton, Tiffany & Co., and Cartier, there's guaranteed to be something for everyone on your list. Oh, and did I mention everything's up to 90% off retail?
Get $25 off your first purchase at TheRealReal.com. That's TheRealReal.com to get your $25 off. TheRealReal.com. This podcast is supported by The RealReal.
You know what I love most about the holidays? Giving gifts. But not just any gifts. Real gifts. Thoughtful gifts. Oh my God, how did you know gifts? That's why I love gift shopping with The RealReal. The RealReal is the most trusted name in authenticated luxury resale. And it's a holiday shopping secret I'm going to let you in on. Whether it's a surprisingly affordable, pristine condition bag for your BFF, a vintage find that's cool enough for the Gen Zer in your life, or even something your impossible to shop for dad will love. Get used to saying, I found it on The RealReal. Seriously, with over 10,000 new arrivals dropping every day from brands like Gucci, Fendi, Prada, Louis Vuitton, Tiffany & Co., and Cartier, there's guaranteed to be something for everyone on your list. Oh, and did I mention everything's up to 90% off retail?
Get $25 off your first purchase at TheRealReal.com. That's TheRealReal.com to get your $25 off. TheRealReal.com.
Welcome to The Deep Dive. If you've felt kind of overwhelmed trying to sort through the news this week, trying to figure out what's real, what's just politics, and what's actually a major shift,
yeah,
then you're in the right place.
Yeah, we're really tackling that core problem today. How do you separate the, let's call it the 1A story from the 1B story? A1A is like, confirmed, it's certain, it changes things. A1B, well, it's important, maybe, but it's uncertain, it's messy, depends on which way the wind blows.
That's a perfect way to put it, because when we looked last night, most major news sites, 4 out of 5, had Letitia James's indictment as their big, confirmed 1A lead story. But the news out of Israel, which could be huge, was consistently in that 1B slot.
Exactly. And that contrast, that's kind of our roadmap. One source nailed it, peace in Israel, that's 1A, but peace in Israel, maybe, well, that's 1B. And our mission today is really to dive into that may, into the uncertainty, the contradictions behind 4 big stories unfolding right now.
Okay, so let's start there. That big 1B, peace in Israel, maybe. What do we actually know for sure about this agreement?
Well, the foundation seems relatively clear. Donald Trump announced this 20-point plan last week, backed it up with a pretty loud threat saying all hell will break out if they didn't comply. Then you had diplomacy, U.S. envoys Witkoff and Kushner involved. And then Hamas accepted, and then the Israeli government accepted.
Okay, so acceptance from both sides. Mm. And that kicks off phase one, right? What has to happen immediately for this thing to hold?
Phase one needs 4 things right away. First, everyone stops shooting. Obvious, but yeah. Second, Hamas has to return all the remaining hostages, living or deceased. Third, Israel frees a couple of thousand Palestinian prisoners. That's the quote. And finally, aid gets distributed freely in Gaza. Oh, and the U.S. is sending 200 troops just to monitor the ceasefire.
Monitor. God, on paper, that sounds pretty concrete. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, history tells us the implementation is where these things get really, really messy. How confident are we, based on the sources, that the shooting has actually stopped or will stop?
Historically, not confident at all. We know it's almost a pattern that groups often ramp up the shooting right before a ceasefire kicks in. There were reports yesterday, dozens of casualties, and late last night that Israeli Defense Force ordered to stop. Still unconfirmed by international observers, it's often like a final violent negotiation tactic. So, no, it's probably not quite over yet.
And even if the shooting does stop today, moving from just an armistice to, stable peace, That's incredibly hard. You think about the difference between, say, the end of World War II versus the Treaty of Versailles, mm-hmm. or the Korean War armistice. We're in the eighth decade of that Cold War because governance wasn't sorted out.
That's the core problem here. It really highlights the biggest contradiction in this deal, governance, the Trump plan. It suggests this international board of peace, Trump and Tony Blair co-chairing it, running Gaza. But Hamas, and apparently a lot of Palestinians, are insisting, no, it has to be a Palestinian body running things, not international. That's a huge crack in the foundation right from phase one.
Which makes you wonder about the timing. Why now? Both sides said no to a similar Biden plan last year. Why yes this time?
The sources suggest pretty strong internal pressures on both sides. Hamas was likely getting really low on supplies, maybe losing some internal support for a long guerrilla war. And for Israel, well, their international position had gotten significantly weaker.
You can definitely point to specifics there.
Yeah.
The ICC indictment of Netanyahu, big Western allies like the UK, France, recognizing Palestine as a state, and that massive shift in U.S. public opinion polls showing more Americans supporting Palestine than Israel now. That's like a 49-point swing since October 7th. Huge.
So the key takeaway here might be, yes, Trump's taking credit, but maybe he just, as one source put it, entered from stage right at a very opportune time. Both sides might have already been looking for an off-ramp, which, you know, leads to all that speculation about why they rushed the announcement.
Ah, the Nobel Peace Prize speculation, right? Secretary Rubio supposedly pulled Trump out of a meeting, told him they had to announce now for PR. They hit the deadline for the 2025 prize.
Exactly. But our sources were pretty skeptical about the Nobel chances anyway, even with the rush. The committee historically has a super high bar. Only Oslo got a Nobel for Middle East peace, and it didn't go to the U.S. president. And honestly, the decision was probably already made weeks ago, well before this deal came together. Logistics matter.
Logistics beat the politics.
Yeah.
And we saw the result.
Yeah.
The prize went to Maria Corina Machado from Venezuela.
Yeah.
So classic 1B story. Looked big, lots of noise, bit uncertain. And ultimately didn't make that jump to the big 1A win.
Okay, let's shift gears then to the story that actually did grab that 1A headline slot yesterday, the domestic story, the indictment of New York AG Letitia James.
Yeah, and this one feels deeply political right from the start. It's framed as part of this revenge pattern, right?
Yeah.
After James Comey's indictment, James, a black woman, a Democrat, she oversaw investigations leading to Trump becoming a, 34 times convicted felon? The clear read from the sources is that this looks like using the justice system against a political opponent.
And the charge itself. Bank fraud. Making false statements to a bank. It's about a house James bought back in 2020 in Norfolk, Virginia. Allegedly, she said it was a second residence, but then rented it out, suggesting it was really an investment property.
Okay. And if that's proven, what was the actual financial gain? What's the damage?
The claim is she got a lower interest rate because of that misrepresentation. 3% instead of 3.815%, which means, allegedly, the bank lost out on about $18,933. Now, that's not, you know, chump change, but it's also not an amount you'd typically see sparking a major federal case, which again sort of underlines the potential political angle here.
What's really interesting are the legal hurdles the prosecution seems to be facing. It almost suggests the politics might be stronger than the actual legal case.
Yeah, three big ones jump out from the source material. First, that indictment. Signed only by the U.S. Attorney for Eastern Virginia, Lindsay Halligan. She's a Trump appointee. That's really unusual. Usually you'd see more career prosecutors signing on, suggest maybe they didn't buy into it. Second, proving intent. They have to show James intended to defraud the bank. That's always tough in court.
And then there's the timing issue, the statute of limitations. 5 years for federal charges, right? She bought the house in August 2020, so that clock is running out, or maybe has run out. And the prosecution's argument to get around that seems creative, that every mortgage payment was a new crime.
It's legally risky, yeah. A judge could easily toss that argument out. It seems like an attempt to stretch the timeline. And finally, there's this whole question about whether Halligan's appointment was even legal in the first place. If it wasn't, the whole indictment could be voided. They'd have to start over, find someone else willing to push this case. So ironically, the legal weaknesses kind of become the strongest evidence pointing towards that political motivation behind this big 1A headline.
That kind of political weaponization, you know, ignoring legal expertise for political goals, it actually creates a perfect bridge to our next segment, moving from weaponizing the law to, well, weaponizing public health information.
Indeed. We turn now to what our sources called today in crazy, this cabinet meeting where Trump and RFK Jr. were basically congratulating each other on fighting autism through their anti-vax, anti-Tylenol campaigns. Trump even said, you know, I'm not a doctor, but I'm a man of common sense.
Wow. But the specific claim that really caught fire was from RFK Jr. He said two studies, his words show that kids circumcised early have double the rate of autism, and he links it, saying it's highly likely because they're given Tylenol during the procedure.
Right, and this is where we really need to scrutinize the data or the lack of it. The immediate reaction from medical professionals and our sources was blunt. Two studies is nothing in medical research, nothing conclusive. And we run smack into that classic confusion. Correlation doesn't equal causation. Just because two things happen together doesn't mean one caused the other.
Okay, so let's unpack that correlation then. If these two studies showed some link, what's the likely real reason if it's not Tylenol?
It's almost certainly socioeconomic, not chemical. Circumcision often correlates with higher economic status in the U.S. And higher economic status correlates with better access to doctors, specialists, people who can actually diagnose autism. So it's likely a reporting difference. Wealthier parents get the diagnosis, not some link between, you know, the procedure and the painkiller.
And there's just basic evidence that contradicts the theory, right?
Yeah.
Circumcision rates have actually gone down in the U.S. over recent decades. Autism diagnoses have gone up. Plus, autism exists everywhere, including in populations with absolutely no tradition of circumcision.
Exactly. These claims really depend on ignoring pretty straightforward, widely available counter-evidence.
It's just a stark example of how political narratives can just steamroll established medical science, leading to some really dangerous public health talk.
Yeah, deeply concerning.
Okay, finally, let's wrap up with the other major story that's still unfolding, that escalating 1B nightmare. The government shutdown. We're into week two now, right? That's usually when the pain really starts to bite, moves beyond just inconvenience.
Oh, yeah. The ripple effects are getting serious. Air travel is probably the most visible. Staffing shortages are causing, like, more than half of all the flight delays. And the U.S. Travel Association, they estimate it's costing $1 billion in lost spending every single week.
Wow. And taxpayer services basically grinding to a halt.
Pretty much. The IRS furloughed almost half its people when the money ran out. The Taxpayer Advocate Service, the people who help you sort out complicated tax problems, completely shut down. And more critically, the safety nets are starting to fray fast.
Let's be clear about those safety nets. What are we talking about?
Okay, the WIC program, that's Nutrition for Women, Infants, and Children, its contingency fund, almost gone. And SNAP benefits food stamps, that's 41 million Americans. Funding only lasts through the end of October. If this shutdown keeps going, you're looking at 41 million families hitting a food cliff.
And the timing, just awful for other things too. Peak hurricane season, and the National Flood Insurance Program can't issue new policies, can't renew old ones. Smithsonian Museums, the National Zoo, they're set to close October 11th. It touches everything.
We should also quickly clarify who's affected in the workforce, because it's not uniform. You have accepted or essential, workers think, air traffic controllers, TSA, Border Patrol, VA staff. They have to work, but without pay currently. They are guaranteed back pay eventually. Then furloughed workers, maybe in research or admin, they stay home, also guaranteed back pay.
But the people really hurting are the federal contractors, right?
Exactly. The folks who clean the buildings, do IT support, logistics. They aren't protected by those back pay guarantees. They just don't get paid. That money's gone forever for them.
And connecting this back to the bigger picture, the economy. Maybe the worst long-term damage is just institutional blindness, because key data isn't coming out.
That's a huge issue. Key economic reports, the jobs numbers, retail sales, that big third quarter GDP estimate, they're all delayed or just suspended. So the Federal Reserve, private companies, forecasters, they're all, as you said, flying blind. They can't make good decisions without the data. Plus, this messes up annual inflation adjustments for everything. Tax brackets, student loans, cost of living increases. It's like institutional self-sabotage.
And there's political maneuvering layered on top of it all.
Seems pretty clear, yeah. The administration seems to be trying to amplify the pain in areas seen as Democratic districts threatening layoffs there, while at the same time making sure funding continues for things like immigration enforcement, which are key Republican priorities.
So looking across all four of these big narratives today,
The
fragile peace deal, the weaponized indictment, the crazy health misinformation, the shutdown chaos, the common thread seems to be this real struggle to find solid truth amidst all the uncertainty and political spin.
Absolutely. We've looked at the instability of a peace, maybe? The, frankly, political corruption seeming to drive a legal case, junk science pushed by powerful people, and the sheer chaos of a shutdown that stops us from even knowing basic facts about our own economy.
It really raises a fundamental question for you, the listener, to think about. We depend so much on institutions, medical, legal, governmental, to give us clarity, to give us facts, especially when things are volatile. So what happens to the country's health or the economy's stability when those very sources that are supposed to give you factual, verifiable information, GDP data, medical consensus, impartial justice, when those sources themselves become politicized or misinformed or just go dark?
That absence of reliable knowledge, that's the vulnerability that connects all these stories. And that, I think, is the essential question to mull over until we meet again.
Thank you for diving deep with us.
AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's rubrik.com.
Give the gift that everyone wants, Omaha Steaks. Right now, save 50% site-wide, plus get an extra $35 off with code HOLIDAYGIFT at checkout. Save on USDA-certified tender bacon-wrapped filet mignons, perfectly aged ribeyes, gourmet sides, and decadent desserts delivered right to their door. Skip the stress. Order now at omahasteaks.com. That's omahasteaks.com and use code HOLIDAYGIFT at checkout to get an extra $35 off. Hurry, these deals won't last. Minimum purchase may apply. See site for details.